Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Listener, released with this episode is going to be a free fireside chat, and I'm going to release one next episode as well, just to give you guys a taste of what you're missing on the Patreon that just isn't Black Label, because there's other stuff that gets released there too. If you'd like to hear more, head to patreon.com/obscurecrimepodcast. If not, just enjoy the episodes and the fireside chat. Listener, this is part 2 of Tina Brown's story, though story feels like the wrong word. Stories imply distance and shape, and some faint notion of order. In the first part, I walk through the wasteland Tina came from, the early rot that clung to her like a second skin. I trace the fault lines she inherited, the small cruelties she learned before she had the language to name them. But backstory is only the soft-lit hallway that leads to the locked room. And tonight, we open the door. This episode enters the place where damage begins to animate itself, where old grievances stop being thoughts and curdles into action. Tina lived among 3 other women, all of them adrift, all of them carrying private ruin. They shared walls, secrets, suspicions, the belief that betrayal was the only reliable currency. In such a place, even a quiet afternoon feels like an animal holding its breath. I will not reveal the final ledger here. This is just an intro, not the full measure of what was done, nor how long the night lasted. But this is the episode where every hidden impulse steps into the open, where Tina Brown ceases to merely be a product of her environment, her past, and becomes an instrument of torment. What we approach now is not just violence, but a final moral collapse, so complete, no one involved, living or dead, can ever return to the person they were before. This is the descent, and once taken, there is no path back to light. All right, let's get on with it.
Welcome, listener. I'm glad you're here. Take a seat next to the fire.
Welcome to Obscura, where we shine a light on the dark.
Heather saying that she sees the taser in your house and that Brittany has it. And that Brittany
where
has tried
it?
To... I know where it is right now. It's in my evidence locker.
Okay, well then why do we have it?
Because Heather says you have it. And because Adriana says she was tased with it.
Where in the fuck will we get a taser from? We don't even know nobody here. We don't have no family here. Only people we know is the people in the trailer park. Where would we get a taser from?
I don't know. You can buy them all over the place.
Hmm?
They sell them at pawn shops and everywhere else, all over the place.
Well, could you check and see if we bought one then?
It doesn't matter. You could have got given to you from a friend. Do you really think that that's going to matter? I probably couldn't find that Adriana's bought one either.
You didn't buy it.
Well?
That boy gave it to her.
In March of 2010, Escambia County lay under a heat that had not yet reached the height of summer, but already clung to the trees like something watchful and intent. The nights were thick and slow. The days smelled of wet earth and the faint metallic tang of the Gulf. On the far edge of Pensacola, a mobile home park sagged against the landscape, pressed down by humidity and time. The gravel lanes moved like pale scars through the sand. Trailers leaned slightly on their cinder block stilts, as if the soil beneath them had shifted in the dark while no one was looking. Porch lights flickered without rhythm. Dogs barked at shadows they could not name. It was the sort of place where quiet was never peace, but a pause between each storm. In the cramped pocket of homes lived four women whose lives circled around one another with jointed and volatile closeness. Tina Brown kept to a trailer whose aluminum sidings had been dented by years of storms. A few lots away, depending on who remembered the layout, lived her 16-year-old daughter, Brittany Miller. Across the way were Heather Lee and 20-year-old Adriana Zimmerman, a young mother whose presence would soon not be tolerated any longer. At first glance, they formed a loose constellation of struggling companionship. They traded cigarettes and rides to town. They lent one another pots, laundry detergent, stories that ran too long, worries spoken with easy exhaustion of poverty. Neighbors in places like this often exist in a kind of accidental family, tied together by circumstance more than affection. But beneath the surface, the soil of this friendship was already turning sour. Their lives were threaded with suspicion, slights real and imagined, grudges that grew faster than forgiveness, and the hard truth that each of them carried wounds that made even simple kindness fragile. There were nights when their laughter drifted down the gravel road in a sign of normalcy. But even then, something brittle lived in the air around them, a tension that had no single source, a pressure that built slowly, almost invisibly, until it became a living thing. The bond between Brown, Miller, and Zimmerman was in a state of quickening decay. Their interactions carried a restless edge, as if compassion and hatred were constantly trading places.
This young lady is our crime scene tech. We need to take photos, front, back, all around, that sort of thing. Also, at this time, I'm requesting DNA. Would you submit to DNA?
What is that?
It's, you know, buccal swabs from your mouth. Is that fine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let me knock that out real quick, and then I'll let you take pictures. Okay.
Brown accused Zimmerman of slashing her tires. Zimmerman accused Brown of smashing the window of her car. There were murmurs about cheating. Whispers of men passed back and forth. Accusations of betrayal spoken through cracked phone screens. Zimmerman believed Brown had reported her to the Florida Department of Children and Families, claiming she was not caring for her children properly. She was led to assume that Tina Brown had done this. She would be correct. Every rumor and petty act layered on itself over the last, and much of it true, like dry vegetation gathering in the understory of a forest waiting for a spark. The women were interlinked and perhaps too alike. Heather Lee spent far too many afternoons trying to pull Tina and Zimmerman apart. Their anger towards each other grew fast and unpredictable, fed by jealousy and youthful recklessness.
But I've got people talking that you called them and told them what happened. You're trying to get up, so as soon as you get your car back,
no, I'm telling them what you guys have been saying.
I didn't tell them you were going to get out of town as soon as you got your car back. Why do I want to say that? I ain't talked to them.
My dad, the one told us, invited us, me and my daughter, to come down there. He said, because you guys don't have any family here. Stuff like this happened, you don't have nowhere to go.
Where's your dad from?
Then he said, Ohio. Okay. He's originally from Illinois. Then he told me that he talked to you guys. No, we had called him. He said he was going to send us, me and my daughter, money to come down there this Wednesday. Okay? So I called him that, well, I had my daughter call him that Tuesday night and asked him, was he still going to send us money? He said, well, no, I've talked to them down there, and they said that you guys can't go anywhere. Well, we weren't told we couldn't go anywhere.
Well, he mentioned that to me, too.
After that, I cussed him out, and I ain't hear from him no more. We weren't told that we couldn't go nowhere. He's the one said that we should get from down here because we don't have any family here.
One fight carved itself into memory. Tina had found out that Zimmerman had been sleeping with her daughter's boyfriend. The knowledge worked through her like a poison. She saw Zimmerman with a kind of blind fury that makes a person forget the difference between impulse and consequence. And when she lunged, Zimmerman reacted without thought, drawing a stun gun and firing it in trembling self-defense. It was a small action, a desperate tool used in fear, but it set in motion a chain of events that could not be undone. Later that day, Lee asked Brown if she could put up with this brazen act. She spoke plainly. Brown listened. She rolled it over in her mind. Tina Brown responded with a simple sentence. She said she was going to get Zimmerman. It was not spoken in rage. It was not shouted. It was delivered with a calm certainty that hinted at something cold beneath the words.
I heard that you felt like... That
you heard? That girl... How can you go on hearsay, but you don't want to hear what I say that's supposed to be hearsay? So what difference does that make?
First of all, you need to lower your tone when you're talking
I'm
to me.
I'm upset. I should
you
be.
You upset all you want. Lower your tone when you're talking to me. You want to hear what I have to say?
Yes,
I don't
sir.
Care if you
yes,
do.
Sir.
I'll walk out of this room. It don't make nothing to me. I don't know you. I don't care to know you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you talking to somebody and telling them that, well, she go ahead and die, y'all be good to go. Well, that ain't the case, is it? Because she died. She died last night. Succumbs to her wounds.
Mm-hmm. And guess what? That's premeditated.
Yeah.
So you sit here and play all these little games you want to. You want to help, be able to help yourself. You want somebody to be able to tell your side of the story of what happened that night. But you sitting here copping this badass attitude,
no,
and it's not helping nothing.
It's not
helping you, Brittany, or anybody else involved in it.
They told us that she was in a coma yesterday.
She died last night.
She died last night. Why you think we come back out there like gangbusters today?
Mm-hmm. That's why you're under arrest for murder.
Dad is the one who told us that.
Who?
Our lawyer, Gene, his dad. He said he called down there and they said that she was in a deep coma.
Well, she didn't come out of it. So guess what? We got information from the ME that she didn't make it because of the burns. Now, you sit there, you think about
she
it.
She could have.
You think about what we're saying. That woman, those kids would never see their mama again. You've got a chance to see your
you
kids.
You think I don't know that?
You've got a chance to see your kids again somewhere down the road. Now, like I said, we're not going to sit here with you as long as we did the other night. So if you got nothing to say.
Where's Gene at? I guess not. You already got me convicted.
Ain't nobody got you convicted. We just got you charged.
Everybody got me convicted. Where I'm going, I'm supposed to go now.
So you want to talk to Gene? Is that what you're saying? You want to talk to Gene?
I don't know.
Is that what you want?
I don't know.
Well, if you don't want to talk to us.
Oh no.
Do you want to talk to us without your lawyer present, or you want to talk to us with your lawyer?
Oh no.
Well, we need to know. That's burning minds want to know.
Am I supposed to go now? To jail?
Yeah, you under arrest.
Okay.
So what you tell me, you ready to go?
Oh my God.
In the days that followed, the trailer park grew heavy with silence. Conversations happened behind closed doors. Figures moved across the small patch of land with a strange deliberateness. The Florida dusk deepened earlier that week, the sky turning a rusted pink with patches of bruised purple. Nothing dramatic happened. No arguments in the street, but something had shifted, something noted, and the air carried the uneasy stillness of a match lying beside kindling. On March 24th, just after darkness settled across the park, Brown extended an invitation to Zimmerman. She offered it as a gesture of reconciliation, a chance to mend fences, to let past grievances fade. But the invitation had been shaped long before the words were spoken. It was a lure, listener, crafted with care and intention. Inside Brown's trailer, the preparations had already begun. Brown, Miller, Lee, and a 13-year-old friend of Miller's gathered in the cramped interior. The trailer smelled of old linoleum and damp cabinets. The single overhead light in the kitchen cast long, thin shadows that stretched across the countertops. Brown held the stun gun in her hand. Lee stood with her, explaining how to use it, demonstrating the quick snap of the trigger. In another part of the trailer, Miller leaned close to her young friend. Her tone was soft, almost gentle, but the meaning of her words settled in the room like a cold wind. "We are fixing to kill Audriana Zimmerman." It was the sort of sentence that does not feel real when first heard.
Tina, what I'm saying, you know, things get out of hand. Maybe you didn't mean for it to be this way, but that's what I say. We don't know. So you need us to be able to tell your side of the story when it comes time to go before the judge. And by you just sitting over there, not, you know, thinking we don't have nothing, we've only gave you a little bit of what we got. Mm-hmm. And believe me, it's not hearsay. We know that night those clothes were taken and burned that y'all were wearing.
Burn where?
We still
had the same clothes on the next morning when they came to get us. I mean, when they came to get Brittany.
Okay.
I told Heather yesterday. I told her. No, you're not.
Oh,
you're not making
it
up. Because I told Heather the same thing. Somebody is trying to set me up. Because first it was supposed to be all three of us, then it was four of us. Now it seems like everything has been trying to
burn
on me.
Who's the four?
Who's the four?
They said in the paper or on the TV or something that it was supposed to have been four.
I think they were going for my search warrant, and I don't think there was anything about four.
A little after 9, Zimmerman approached the trailer. The night was cool for late March. She stepped inside with the easy trust of someone who believed the offer of peace. The women spoke casually, their voices soft and almost friendly. There was nothing to warn her, nothing to suggest the violence coiled in the shadows of that room. Then Brown moved. The stun gun struck Zimmerman before she could rise from her seat. Electricity seized her muscles, and she crumpled, a desperate cry tearing out from her. The crackling of the device filled the trailer, a sound that clung to the air like smoke. Brown continued to fire, unmoved by the desperate pleas. The cries for help. The thin walls did nothing to contain the terror, then folded inside them. The noise grew too loud. Brown grabbed Zimmerman and dragged her across the floor into the bathroom. The small space was swampy with heat and steam from an earlier shower. Zimmerman's cries ricocheted off the tile. Miller, trembling with adrenaline, struck her. Lee forced a sock into her mouth. The room felt like it was tumbling inward. The women hauled Zimmerman outside. The sky above the tree line looked heavy, as if weighed down by the dark. They forced her toward the trunk of Brown's car. The metal slammed shut with a final and merciless sound.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of a dying declaration?
No.
That's powerful. I'm gonna tell you now. When we walk out this door this afternoon, there's not go- next time you see me, we'll be in a courtroom.
Either way it go, I ain't going home. So, right.
But what I'm saying, yeah, you're not going home
right,
today.
Right.
But what I'm trying to tell you, the next time you see me and this officer here, we'll be in a courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when they call us to the stand, it's going to be beneficial to you for us to be able to tell your side of the story. You want somebody to be able to tell your side of the story. Now, we just didn't pick you out of the order. Just cause, hey, let's go after her because she's from out of town. She's got no relatives here.
I know you didn't.
And as far as all this crap about you hearing from the trailer park, it's what happened here in the past, that you throw that out the window too.
And the funny thing is, everyone we talk to on this case all have a different story.
Yeah, I know that. You should hear the shit we've been here.
But, Tina, I don't want to walk out this
I
door.
I want to talk, but I'm not saying nothing what I want to tell
you. I can't hear what you said.
What'd you say?
We want to know why.
Because I'm gonna tell you what's going to happen. And that's an attorney's going to tell you not to say nothing. You want some water? Huh?
Oh my God.
You want some water?
Yes.
Okay. Get it.
No, I don't want the water.
You don't want no water?
No.
You need some paper towels or tissue?
No.
Okay, just take your time and get your composure. I see it in you. You're trying to protect somebody. You know what? You know who I'm thinking? I'm thinking you're protecting? You're protecting Brittany.
No. Oh, my God.
Brown drove them from the trailer park, the headlights cutting through the trees in long pale ribbons. The road narrowed into sand and roots, leading them deeper into the woods, where the sounds of the world grew thin. The 13-year-old was left behind, paralyzed in fear, watching the taillights disappear as though they were sinking into the earth. At the clearing, the trunk snapped open. The night held its breath. Zimmerman tried to run, her limbs propelled by instinct alone, but she stumbled and fell. Brown and Miller dragged her down, the stun gun firing again. The crowbar rose and fell in frantic rhythm, tearing the skin. Brown went back to the car. She returned carrying a gasoline can. The smell filled the clearing, sharp and unmistakable.
How old are you?
39.
You still got a full life ahead of you.
Yeah.
There's still a chance. Don't throw it away. Don't throw that chance away. Brittany still has a chance.
Mm-hmm.
She's got her whole life ahead of her. She what, 15, 16?
16.
And my next question, I'm going to let you talk. Are you willing to take that chance? Listen to me. Are you willing to take the chance, you, Brittany, and Heather, and y'all willing to take that chance? You're going to come out of this smelling like a rose without us and telling your side story. Do what? Is that
you know, I've only been here for 8 months.
Yes, ma'am.
8 months.
I understand you left Illinois because you wanted to get away from the lifestyle that you ran up there. Here you come down here, you get right back in it.
Sounds like something my dad would say. No, like he really gives up.
You and Tina, we told you what we thought. We told you what we knew. We didn't tell you all of it, but we told you enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real question is, we pretty much don't think you've been telling us the truth. So, I mean, you know, that's what it comes down to.
Okay.
So it comes down to that.
Okay.
Either you're willing to tell us or not.
It's decision time. Do you want to help yourself, or do you want to go in the courtroom taking that chance?
All he wants is the truth.
That's all I'm asking. Just be honest with you. Tell us the truth. Is this just because this happened, does this make you a bad person? Not necessarily.
No.
Not necessarily. But something happened out there and it triggered this type of reaction. That's all we're wanting is the truth. And I guarantee the truth will help you in the long run.
You know, people usually don't believe us when we tell them that until later that they realize, I wish I had talked to you that day.
Right.
And you can
set up by the police, too. Drug cases and everything, because the police.
We ain't set you up.
I tell you, we got to wait for some lab results and stuff like that.
You told me.
But we told you the basics of what the case is. We ain't hiding nothing. The basics of the case is what we told you. I can't go into every detail, but that's what it is. Okay?
Zimmerman tried to get away with even more frantic fear, but the crowbar and the stun gun came down again and again. Then Tina Brown grabbed the can again and poured it over Zimmerman until the air itself seemed saturated with fumes. Zimmerman cried out as the gas stung hot in her open wounds. She begged Tina Brown to let her live, that she wouldn't tell anyone. Tears and snot poured from the injured woman in open desperation. Listener, there is no room for quiet dignity when you're soaked in gasoline. Then there was a sudden spark. The flame erupted bright against the dark brush. Lee would later testify that Miller jumped beside her, screaming words that seemed meant to erase any trace of humanity left in the moment. The woods swallowed the sound, holding it in its branches. Horrifyingly, Zimmerman spoke plainly as she burned. It's not always like the movies. She calmly begged the women to put her out. As fire burned through layers of her skin, her voice rising gently from the flame, the girls left Zimmerman burning in the clearing and returned to the car. The forest behind them shifted with a low, consuming light. They drove away, leaving the young woman to endure something no person should ever face. Zimmerman lay burning in the clearing, seemingly too injured and tired to move.
So then why are we arrested?
Cuz there's more than enough probable cause to believe you did this. More than enough. A judge reviewed what we did and said, agreed with us.
Okay.
And he decided what your bond would be. We didn't get to pick what your bond was.
Where's my bond?
No bond. You'll be able to read the arrest report when you go over there and book you in. They'll let you have a copy of it.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I see. You saw the Channel 3 news. If you went back to your trailer, you probably saw the copy we left of your of the search warrant. That's what all they had. That's all they had.
A copy of what?
The search warrant. We left one at your trailer.
Oh.
I mean, you probably read it. That's all they had. That's what they were reporting on. It was filed with the court, so they took it and read from it.
Listener, Chime is changing the way people bank. Fee-free and smarter banking built for you, not just the 1%. Chime isn't just another banking app. They unlock smarter banking for everyday people with products like MyPay, giving you access to up to $500 of your paycheck anytime and getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. Some old banks still don't do this. Forget overdraft fees, minimum balance fees, and monthly fees. Chime makes your everyday spending work harder by delivering real rewards and financial progress. Earn up to 3.5% APY on savings, 8 times higher than traditional banks. And Chime is rated 5 stars by USA Today for customer service. Real humans, 24/7. And Chime also has the Chime Card, the new card that unlocks safer credit building and cash back with everyday spending. Together, at last. There's no annual fees, no interest, and no strings attached. And when you get qualifying direct deposits, you get 1.5% cash back on eligible Chime Card purchases. My younger self would have benefited so much from this. Chime is not just smarter banking. It is the most rewarding way to bank. Join the millions who are already banking fee-free today. It just takes a few minutes to sign up. Head to chime.com/obscura. That is chime.com/obscura. Listener, I want to take a moment to recommend another podcast called Mind of a Monster, The Killer Nurse. Mind of a Monster is a podcast series from ID that drives into the minds of notorious serial killers like Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, and more. This season, they explore the chilling story of Kristen Gilbert, a nurse who murders 4 of her patients between 1989 and 1995, and is suspected of killing dozens more. Criminal psychologist Dr. Michelle Ward takes us inside Kristen's twisted mind, uncovering why she kills and how she manages to do it right in front of her colleagues. The entire season is out right now, so you can binge it wherever you get your podcasts. And coming up next, they're covering Israel Keyes, a serial killer who picks his victims at random across the U.S. and covers his tracks with terrifying precision. That new season drops early next year. Don't miss it. Listener, if you like Obscura, you'll definitely enjoy Mind of a Monster, The Killer Nurse. Listen to Mind of a Monster, The Killer Nurse, wherever you get your podcasts.
So, you probably saw the news. Did you see the news? Okay.
A third of a mile away, in the bruised hush of that humid night, with the slight, uncharacteristic coolness in the air, Terrence Hendricks stepped out of his porch. The wooden slats creaked beneath him, like old bones settling into damp earth. The air hung heavy, laced with the faint sound of insects humming, but something sharper cut through it now. A voice, thin, ragged, drifted through to him. At first, it seemed unreal, a trick of the mind, calling for help in fractured syllables that echoed off the trees. He paused, straining his eyes against the dark, narrowing into the void where the road dissolved into shadow and sand. Then he saw her, and then she emerged. Zimmerman staggered forward from the woods, her form a grotesque silhouette against the faint glow of distant porch lights. She moved with the labored grace of something dragged back from oblivion. She was a dark effigy of pain, her body twisted into shapes that mocked the human frame. Each step was a deliberate betrayal of flesh against her will. Her skin crackled audibly as she walked, a sickening chorus of pops and hisses like wet wood splintering in flame. The charred surface of her skin split open in jagged lines to reveal the raw, weeping underlayers beneath. Pitch black dominated the surface of her body, a veil of carbonized ruin that clung like tar. Her charred black skin was streaked with ghostly white, where the deeper burns had peeled away to expose the palate's sinew and bone. Glistening wetly under the indifferent stars, blisters had bloomed and burst in her wake, leaving trails of fluid that streaked her skin. Her outline blurred into a nightmare of melted contours, her arms dangling like wilted branches, her face a swollen mass where features had softened and sagged into unrecognizable shapes. From her ruined lips came low, guttural moans, animal sounds of torment that rose and fell with each tortured breath, vibrating through the humid air like a dirge from the depths. The smell hit him before she reached the porch, a choking wave that coiled in his nostrils and lodged in his throat. It was the acrid bite of gasoline, sharp and chemical, mingled with the deeper, more primal reek of scorched meat, like overcooked fat dripping onto coals. This was laced with the metallic tang of blood and the sour undercurrent of singed hair. It was the odor of anguish distilled that spoke of fire's greedy hunger. It spoke of the skin rendered to ash and agony, carrying with it the faint, ghostly whisper of the cheap drugstore perfume Zimmerman had sprayed on herself that morning. Hendrick recoiled instinctively. His stomach turned as the scent wrapped around him, thick and inescapable. It was a harbinger of suffering that now lurched into view. She collapsed onto the edge of his porch, her body folding and bending in strange ways that seemed inhuman. The crackling of her skin gave way to low, wheezing moans with each breath. Up close, the details etched themselves into his memory like acid on metal. Her injuries so profound that race dissolved into irrelevance, her form reduced to a universal emblem of torment. Black and blistered and broken, she sat there, rocking faintly, her arms extended in silent supplication, as if praying to someone that only returned indifference. Through the ruins of her lips, she forced words, pleas for help, fragments of a story too horrific to hold shape. Her voice was a rasping echo from the depths of what remained. In that moment, the night thickened around them. The woods held their secrets close, as if the earth itself had exhaled this vision of hell to remind the living of the fragile line between mercy and the abyss.
911, what's going on out there?
Say somebody outside bun up. Her is laid on fire right now.
Do what?
She bun all up. You gotta.
She burnt?
She burnt. Sounds like somebody probably set the car on fire or something. I don't know. She just come out of the woods at my house.
At 9:24 p.m., an EMT arrived. He found Zimmerman sitting upright, rocking gently, her arms extended. She didn't want to lower them from the pain. Her skin was so damaged he could not tell if she wore clothing. Her jaw hung at an unnatural angle from the crowbar. He tried to offer aid, but her wounds were beyond the reach of his training and equipment. Her skin came away at his touch. He had no supplies capable of covering what had been done to her.
She was kind of moaning. She was just in a sitting position, and the way she was looking was it hurt to move anywhere, so she was kind of in whatever position she was the most comfortable. It was in a sitting with her arms stuck straight out. She was moaning, and it was hard to understand her due to her jaw. Her jaw was very deformed and stuck out. So she kept, you know, mumbling, "Help me, help me." And I told her, you know, "I'll try to help you. You just got to stay there and try not to move for me." Really, with a burn victim like that, there's nothing much we can do until EMS gets there.
And your training experience when you saw her, what was your first thought?
That's the worst one I've seen. I couldn't believe she was still conscious and alert with the amount of burns she had.
Did you feel her condition was grave?
Yes, sir.
Just from your experience and seeing what you've seen?
Yes, sir. Just from seeing that, plus the head trauma, the amount of head trauma she had to her face, I would not have expected her to make it through the night. She kept telling me I'm about to pass out. So I told her to try to stay awake for me, and I wanted to get the info of the suspects before she passed out.
Yet, listener, she remained conscious. She identified Brown and Lee. She explained everything that had been done to her. She begged them to protect her children. Tina, in a heartbreaking moment, asked if she would live. She said she thought they had made peace. She said she thought they were friends again. She held on to hopeful thoughts, even as her body failed her.
In reference to the call, we're on scene. The fire's saying that the patient, she's got second-degree burns over 100% of her body, but she's saying that there was no vehicle involved, that people dragged her out of her house and set her on fire.
She was first taken to a local hospital, then flown to a burn center at the University of South Alabama Hospital in Mobile.
I told her, keep fighting. And she kept saying over and over again, am I going to make it? Am I going to make it? And I told her I was going to try. And she said, just tell me I'm going to wake up and see my babies. I got to talking to her, and I told her that I was probably going to be the last person she talked to for a while, and that in order to catch the people that did this to her, I needed her to tell me if she knew who it was. And I asked her why they did it to her, and she said, I thought we'd made up.
16 days passed. She did not survive. Back to the night of, Brown and Miller returned to the trailer. They stripped off their strained clothes and packed them into a trash bag. Lee added her shoes. Miller confided to her young friend, who sat suspended in shock. Miller and the girl drove to the hospital so Miller could get treatment for her injured hand. On the way, they threw the bag of clothes in a dumpster. Miller tried to scrub blood from inside of the car trunk. Law enforcement moved quickly. Brown and Lee were arrested that night. Miller the next day. They were released temporarily because Zimmerman was still alive. During that time, Brown told her friend, Pamela, what had happened. She recounted beating Zimmerman, forcing her into the car, driving to the clearing, and setting her on fire. When she learned Zimmerman had survived, she asked Pamela to finish the job. Pamela refused and went to law enforcement. This led to the rearrest of all three women on April 9th, the day Zimmerman died. At the crime scene, investigators found white shoes, a stun gun with blood on its handle, blood-stained paper, a multicolored hair weave, a crowbar, a pool of blood. Zimmerman's blood was found on the headrest of Brown's car. Brown's own blood was on the stun gun. The medical examiner ruled that Zimmerman died from multiple thermal injuries. The manner of death was homicide. On June 21, 2012, a jury convicted Tina Brown of first-degree murder. On June 26, they unanimously recommended the death penalty. At the Spencer hearing, Zimmerman's mother delivered a letter. The defense submitted records and a letter from one of Brown's friends. Brown apologized to Zimmerman's family and acknowledged the horror of what had happened. On September 28, 2012, the court sentenced Tina Brown to death. The murder found to be too cold, calculated, premeditated. It was deemed especially heinous, atrocious, cruel. It was committed during the course of a kidnapping. Three reasons, each given great weight. Three reasons the court believed justified taking Brown's life in return for the one she helped destroy. Listener, this is where the road delivers us. To the far edge of what human life can hold before it breaks, and to the moment where Tina Brown's story folds into silence. The courts have spoken, the jurors have weighed their facts, the state has rendered its judgment. Yet, even as the machinery of justice grinds forward with its cold certainty, another truth hangs behind it, older and more difficult. It is the truth that people are often shaped, but not always, long before they ever lift a hand in violence, shaped by the long strata of time and misuse that settle over them grain by grain, until they cannot remember when the weight first became unbearable. Tina Brown carried such a weight. The years carved her down, marking her with the cold arrhythmic of neglect and cruelty. What she endured as a child did not simply vanish with age. It pressed into her, became the lens through which she saw the world, listener. A world that she learned early that could not be trusted. These things matter. They matter because harm leaves a residue that often seeps into every decision, every relationship, every moment when anger rises like a tide, but they do not absolve. They cannot excuse what she chose to do in that clearing. A person's history explains many things. It does not erase the moment the match is struck. Tina Brown had options, even within the narrow corridors of her life, cramped as they were by poverty and addiction and the cruel handwriting of her past. There were paths that wound away from violence, Hard paths, yes, I won't deny that. Winding, uneven, merciless paths that required the kind of strength she may have never had been taught to cultivate. But they existed all the same, and when the time came, she stepped not toward them, but toward the darker trail. The one warmed by rage and sharpened by the years of small betrayals. The trail that ended with another woman burning alive in the Florida woods. Her childhood may explain how the fire found dry timber in her heart. It does not explain why she let it burn. The court records will tell you that the murder was cold and calculated. That it possessed a cruelty that set it apart from the usual savagery of human conflict. They list aggravating factors in careful sequence, turning horror into legal phrasing, as though clarity could somehow be extracted from carnage. But there is no legal language large enough to hold what happened, no statute or sentence that can channel the enormity of that night into something manageable. The survivors, the families, the children that were left behind, they will carry the scar beyond any judgment rendered in the fluorescent light-lit courtroom. Time will move, indifferent and untroubled, grinding forward with the same slow weight that once pressed down on Tina Brown herself. But unlike her, they have no choice in the matter. Time will not show them mercy. It will simply demand that they continue to walk while the memory keeps pace behind them, silent, unblinking. And Tina, locked away as the years drain from her life, like water from a cracked vessel, will face time in its other form, time as punishment, time as witness, time as the long and merciless mirror in which she will not only see what she became, but what she could have been. She had her diploma. She had her wits about her. The path she did not take will live beside the one she did, running parallel forever, but never again within reach. That is its own kind of sentence. There is a point at which all stories begin to taper, where explanation no longer serves and reflection becomes little more than sifting ash. Listener, we have reached that point. We have followed the currents of violence in history and choice to the place where the trail simply ends. There is no lesson here bright enough to illuminate the dark, no moral tidy enough to absolve the living. Only the stark knowledge that a life marked by harm can still create far greater harm, and that suffering passed down through generations does not justify suffering inflicted in a single night. All that remains now is the stillness after the telling. The final breath of a narrative that has exhausted its horrors. The woods remain. The trailer park remains. The memory of a young woman walking out of the darkness, burned and afraid, remains. Tina Brown remains too, though nothing in her future can rewrite what is already carved into her past. This is the end of her story. Not a clean end. Not a comforting one. Only the grim certainty that some acts cast a shadow deep enough that even time, with all its crushing weight, cannot wear it away. Thank you for listening, and keep the fire burning. Listener, how are you? So, this is the first in a reboot of my Q&A fireside chats. I've been saying for a while that I've been collecting questions that I put away in a document and I keep for fireside chats, and over the years, those have built up, and just recently, I created a new thread. The comments are locked, and that's to promote DMing me, so I make sure I see these questions and can add it to the document. So, before I get started on this Q&A episode, do me a favor. If you want, fire off any question you have. It can be related to true crime. It could be related to anything. And if you want, include whatever name you'd like me to call you, or leave a name out if you don't want me to call you anything. That's fine. Okay, and just so you're aware, the methodology of this is random in that I have a document full of questions, and when I pick them out, I just sort of scan through them and grab, you know, three or four, and there you go. That's enough to put together a fireside chat. Now, let's get to question one. Question one says, I was actually wanting to ask if researching these topics, if you ever began to feel unsettled to the core. When I listen to some of them, it just puts me off. Like, I am being watched or anxious. Do you ever feel this way? And that's from a Bo. Well, thank you, Bo. Yeah, I mean, especially early on, I felt this way a lot. The porn episode is an example of that. It was really getting under my skin, and I was wearing headphones and making sure no one could hear what I was listening to when researching that episode. But also just, I think a lot of times when I'm wanting to write an episode, you know, really do the top-to-bottom research and, you know, create the narrative surrounding a case, I want to submerge myself into the muck and try to capture whatever I'm feeling in my writing. So then later when I go to record, I can then transfer that negative energy into the episode, because I do like Obscura and Black Label to be kind of dark. For me, that was the type of true crime I grew up liking, and so I like to capture that feeling. And so, yeah, I can get unsettled, especially particularly upsetting 911 calls, things like that. Strangely enough, I find the 911 calls or body cam footage a little bit more unsettling than just the straight up, you know, visual gore, if that makes sense. For me, it's the being forced to use your imagination. Obscura is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it. So, your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. Listener, did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern that you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. Whether that's mind magic gummies for deep work and creativity, PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get to the perfect mood. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Obscura. Head to Mood.com, find your functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Obscura when you check out to save 20% off your first order. That connects that bridge of empathy for me easier. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. If you feel that way, you know, maybe comment. Okay. Question number two. Hey, Justin, it's Rich. I may have asked you this when you were on my show, but maybe not as direct as I will now. Is there a story you covered that made you lose sleep or even actually get emotional? And the answer to that is yes. Recently, there was the sequel to the porn episode that I did called the Baki Addendum, or Baki Addendum, however you want to pronounce it. And that was where basically someone I was going to interview, when I finally was ready to interview them, they were deceased. And they had committed suicide because the experience that they went through was so disturbing and had ruined their life and had traumatized them for so long. And when I recorded that episode, that was one of the rare, you know, sort of main episodes that was totally off the cuff, without writing, completely from the heart. And I just kind of poured myself emotionally into that episode because I felt absolutely horrible for this person. And yeah, I just wanted to express that. And then, you know, I've mentioned this one a lot, but the Caitlin Nicole Davis episode, that one was bad enough that for a brief period, I had to hire someone else to write the Black Label episodes. This was years ago, of course, but I think watching hundreds of hours of Caitlin Nicole Davis's live streams, I really felt like I got to know her. And since I was doing everything in such order, and it was such a time-consuming experience, that when I got to the end, and I watched that video of this girl committing suicide, and those fuckers in the chat that are telling her to show her tits, and every other kind of awful thing to say to try to exploit someone that is at their wit's end, that had parents that didn't seem to care about them, that had no one in their life that wanted to help her. Well, when I was working on that episode, there wasn't an instance of it where I was able to disconnect myself emotionally. And so if you ever go back and you listen to the Caitlin Nicole Davis episode, you can actually essentially hear me crying by the end of that episode because I go totally off script. And for once, there's actually a bit of a rant at the end there. So, yeah, the Caitlin Nicole Davis episode absolutely haunted me. And you know what? Maybe it should have. I definitely experienced PTSD from that episode. And I think I came out from the other side of that episode a better person. I think sometimes it's worth feeling empathy for someone to the point that it ruins you. Maybe that's a controversial opinion, but I think those moments in my life where I'm just absolutely wrecked with empathy and the fact that I just feel so horrific for someone or that negative energy transfers onto me, I come out the other side of that a better person. And so, yeah. To answer your question, Rich, there have been episodes that I've lost sleep over. Question number three. I just read your invite to ask a question, and I had one. Growing up first world poor, we lived in poor neighborhoods, and crime was always a kind of thing. My first experience of neighborhood violence was at the age of 6 or so, when I woke up to shouting across the street. My neighbor had caught someone breaking into their home and beat them to death in their driveway. I saw the blood and gore and all that goes with it. It never bothered me. As time went on, I saw many other things, including police shooting, an escaped prison inmate, and missing, hitting him in the jaw, blowing most of his face off. Still, didn't bother me. I grew up to work in healthcare, and wonder if my ability to see traumatic events and still do my job was influenced by some of these events. Have you had any similar events in childhood? Could they have led to your interest in the macabre side of violent crime? You are welcome to call me Josh. Well, Josh, yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's influenced you, and I think it's influenced me. And I know what my audience well enough to know that most of you listening have experienced some major trauma in your childhood. Not all, of course. There are exceptions to the rule, but I've been written enough to know that this is a common link between myself and my fans. So maybe us under this like obscure true crime umbrella specifically, maybe a lot of us are connected by childhood trauma. And even if it didn't necessarily bother us at the time, you know, that was developed into our character and folded in ways that we never expected, and sort of showed itself into our adult lives. For me, you know, obviously childhood abuse played a role, but then there were other less dark things that happened to me that likely played a role. My interest in unsolved mysteries and Rescue 911. But no, there's no discounting some events that we go through as childhood in terms of what shapes us, you know? And so, yeah, you know, I don't really worry about it too much these days. In fact, hey, I'll talk to anyone about the sort of abuse I went through as a kid. I don't think it's anything that you should feel ashamed of. And hey, look, I took that negative energy experience in childhood, turned it into a career. So I suppose that there's a silver lining in everything. Okay, from Josh's question, we move on to question 4. I was going back through the back catalog once again, and you mentioned 2 things in an episode. One was regarding the CIA, where you said a lot was left on the cutting room floor. Care to share what was left out? The other one you mentioned about possibly doing an episode regarding things that happened because of Minecraft could possibly be the wrong game. Is that still a possibility? Keep up the amazing work. Okay, so as far as the CIA episodes, there is so much to unwrap there. I did touch on those first 2 episodes a lot, but really it was just foundational stuff. It was getting to the fact that yes, the MKUltra stuff is real. It's not conspiracy theory. Well, I guess you can say it's conspiracy, but it's true. This stuff is mainstream enough that it has its own Wikipedia page. But it was priming you guys potentially for one day touching on some of the crazier stuff out there. So maybe from that sort of foundational CIA episodes that I did, I'd like to eventually get into stuff like Charles Manson and Timothy McVeigh, but not in the way that you normally would think of. As well as like the JFK assassination. There's some stuff surrounding those cases that, you know, isn't so straightforward. The Timothy McVeigh case in general, or the Oklahoma City bombing, that is something that is not straightforward at all. If you spend any time looking into that, I mean, even the victims that were either directly affected or, you know, first responders, etc., a lot of them banded together to try to get evidence related to that case, and the FBI destroyed it. So, yeah, there's a lot as far as the CIA and FBI that I'd like to touch on more in the future. Stuff that isn't wacky. Like I'm telling you, it's not tinfoil type stuff. You know, this is documented things that have happened, but maybe not so often reported on. So yeah, absolutely, that's something I'd like to return to. It just can be hard to tell what people are interested in. I know I do a lot of straightforward true crime or 911 calls, but occasionally I do like to kind of go a little bit out there. Like, I think I was one of the earliest podcasts to ever touch on fatal insomnia, for example. And now it seems like there's so many YouTube channels and everything that put it in their little dark icebergs and stuff like that. So I'm kind of proud of getting to that really early. And, you know, I've done other episodes like the SFWA episodes or the episodes on Cabrini Green or just, you know, more out there stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that just comes down to what you guys will stomach, because I have a lot of interests, but I do know that you can go far enough that you just kind of end up completely off track. An example of that is that, hey, you know, I wanted to spend a good portion of my time also working on that disaster show, but it only captured the interest of a portion of my audience, as much as I love creating disaster episodes. So that's not to say I won't do that stuff going forward, but just it's less incentivized, you know. Usually I have to stick to my bread and butter, and that's to keep everyone happy. It's not over any sort of selling out or anything you could imagine. It's just that I want everyone to tune in and listen, and when people are maybe less interested in a subject, that sucks for me because I love reading comments. I love getting messages. I don't know. I kind of like the feel of like feedback and making you guys happy, the listeners. But anyway, that's the four questions for today. I hope that you enjoyed this format. I'd like to keep it up going forward. I have a lot of questions written down, but I would love more. You guys can ask whatever you want, and I will do my best to answer it. Remember, shoot me a DM on here. Include a name if you want me to use a name. The last question here didn't use a name, so I didn't include it. I'm not going to assume that you want your name or that you have any given nickname without permission. Anyway, I think that wraps things up. I thank you for listening, and keep the fire burning.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.